This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. House Majority Leader Sarah Copeland-Hanzus owns a small business in Bradford. She was among the critics of a bill introduced at the State House last year that would have required employers to offer at least 7 days of paid sick leave each year. Copeland-Hanzus says it was unduly burdensome on businesses, but she wasn't ready to close the door on the concept.
We went about trying to find a way to satisfy the very real needs of working Vermonters, but also balancing with that the needs of business owners in terms of how to comply with that law.
This year's bill is perhaps a compromise. It would require employers to provide 3 days of sick leave annually for the first 2 years of the law, then 5 days per year thereafter. And it would exempt temporary and seasonal workers from the requirements. Today on Vermont Edition, we're going to take a look at the legislation. It's in the House and may not make it all the way through the Senate before the end of the session, but supporters are confident they can get it passed in the second half of the biennium. We are joined now by William Driscoll, Vice President of Associated Industries of Vermont. His organization is opposed to the bill. And by Michelle Fay, Director of the Vermont Paid Sick Days Campaign. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you.
Michelle, why would an employer have to offer paid days off? Why should an employer have to offer that?
Well, we need a bill establishing a minimum standard of paid sick and safe days because a robust economy depends on a strong and supported workforce. And right now, we have 20% of our workforce here in Vermont, that's about 60,000 people, who don't have access to even a single day of paid time off for any reason. These jobs are focused in low-wage service sector fields, and those jobs are populated most typically by women. And as we know, women still hold our primary caregiver responsibilities for their families, whether that's for their kids or for elders. The legislation also provides safe days for victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. This is just critical time during the workday that people can take the steps they need to pursue safety.
But why should an employer have to pay for those things?
Well, there's a bigger issue here around sort of what's our culture about in terms of supporting people. And right now we have around half of the employers in Vermont already providing paid sick days. So there's not a very level playing field for all employers. And what's happening is the folks who do have paid sick days are the ones who tend to be in higher paying jobs. So the most vulnerable employees in the state, the ones who are in low paying jobs with unpredictable schedules and without any benefits, are the ones without paid sick days.
And so this is almost a philosophical position on socioeconomic disparities.
Certainly, it's a desire to see all people working in Vermont working in dignity and being able to have their basic needs met.
Bill Driscoll, do you agree with that?
Well, we believe that the issue of trying to come up with ways to provide leave and support for folks who need it is something that can be done in a more flexible and focused approach. Our concern is just to have a blanket mandate of what's ultimately going to be 5 days of paid sick leave. It's not going to be something that's really affordable or workable for a lot of employers, particularly the smaller ones and the newer ones and the ones who have, because of the nature of their business, there's not a lot of flexibility in how they can meet their customer needs depending on the staffing that they have.
So philosophically, you don't believe that paid sick days are a necessity for all workers?
No, I think as a practical matter in terms of what are the negative consequences of imposing those kind of costs and burdens, particularly on the smaller employers, have a lot of negative consequences for both employers and employees, and that there are better ways to try to pursue some of the goals that are being laid out.
Like
than
what?
Simply approaching that. What we've recommended is sort of a multi-step approach. First of all, certainly the advocates would argue that there can be a lot of benefits for employers to offer a given amount of paid sick leave. And we believe that if we provide the best information about what those potential benefits are and some models about how some employers have been able to provide that in a workable way, that sort of education can lead toward those employers who are in a position to do that to participate in that more. The second idea that's been floated out is for employers who are on the margin, there might be some ways to provide some incentives, perhaps tax incentives or other ways for them to get over some of the affordability hurdles. But also in terms of how do you balance people being able to take leave versus the cost that can impose on their employers and themselves, there's also significant protections in current law for unpaid leave. Now, there may be room for discussing how can we adjust those to maybe maybe fill in some of the gaps that might be there. Also, even providing incentives for folks who do have concerns about whether or not they can afford to take unpaid leave, to the extent that a lot of the benefits that are discussed are societal benefits, there might be ways, again, to provide either tax incentives or other support for folks who really are in a difficult position to take unpaid leave. So there's a whole array of different ways that you can go about this that wouldn't necessarily have some of the unintended consequences of simply a one-size-fits-all, you know, 5 days for everybody.
We're talking today about the concept of paid sick leave and why the legislature is contemplating a mandate for local businesses. We want to hear from you. If you don't have paid sick days where you work, can you give us an example of when that's been a problem for you and how paid sick days might help you? If you're a business owner, where do you fall on this issue? Do you think it costs you money, or do you save in productivity, loyalty, and a healthier workplace if you offer paid days off? That's one of the arguments made by people in favor of this kind of law. So we want to hear your take. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Michelle Fay, do you have sympathy or understanding of some of the needs of small businesses who may have just a couple of employees who do think this would be quite a burden for them?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, our coalition is not interested in killing jobs in the state. We're interested in seeing that Vermonters have access to sustainable, dignified work. So, and I actually have been involved in small businesses for a fair amount of my life and was an employer until January. So I have some firsthand experience around the benefits and costs of applying paid sick days policies in your workplace. I think that the attention to that is reflected in this compromise bill. We, you know, last year's bill had a 7-day limit. This bill is down to a staged-in implementation of 3 days and then 5 days. We listened to the needs of the business community through some very deep engagement that took place through one of our partners, Main Street Alliance, over the summer and fall. And, you know, even employers who we knew were never going to come around to support the bill, we wanted to hear their concerns and make sure that the bill that came out was actually listening to those concerns. Was originally a 500-hour waiting period, and now it's a 1,400-hour waiting period in the bill, is a reflection of that. You know, employers said to us, we want a chance to evaluate our employees and make sure that these are employees we want to keep on for the long term and that they're making a commitment to us, and then we'll make that commitment to them. So that is in there, the reduced cap.
And just to clarify for people who haven't been following this legislation as it moves through piece by piece, that 1,400-hour sort of buffer period is for new employees. They have to wait 1,400 hours or a year, whichever comes first, correct, before they're allowed to take any paid sick time. They will accrue it as they're working, but they can't actually take any of that paid sick time until they've hit that 1,400 hours or that year, whichever comes first.
Yeah, that's right. And we're fortunate in that we're not the first state trying to implement this. We have, I think, 20 or 21 states and cities around the country who have already done it. And you can look to some of those. San Francisco was the one that's been implemented the longest. And 6 years after implementation, they were able to demonstrate that there were no negative impacts to businesses. And actually, the ordinance that they passed is more aggressive than the one that we're trying to pass here in Vermont. It had, like Vermont, it had no carve-out for small businesses, but it had a higher cap. It had a faster accrual rate. And I believe one major difference between ours and San Francisco's is that at any time, people can only use the 3 or the 5 days in a year, whereas in San Francisco, you could keep accruing. There was no limit on the amount that you could use. There was just a limit on what your accrual cap was.
Let's go to some of the calls. Randy's on the line with us from Middlesex. Hi, Randy. Your thoughts today?
Yes, hello. I'm calling as a business owner, and we've actually had paid sick days here at our business for over 3 years, and we started doing that mostly because we felt it was the right thing to do. I mean, this is we have a bakery, Red Hen Baking Company, and we're not able to pay really high wages. Therefore, as is so often the case these days, just about anybody who works for us who has a family certainly has a two-income household, needs to have that. But, of course, they have a family, so their kids are going to get sick. They might get sick themselves, but of course, it adds a whole other layer when you have a family and children involved. we felt that we needed to do this. We knew it might pose some challenges, but actually, as we look at it now, having done it for a few years, it's clear to us that it's done nothing but help our business. We hear about employee retention and that kind of thing.
Well, Brandy, let me ask you this then. If you did this on your own, you looked at what it was going to cost you, you factored in what you thought was the right thing to do, and you say now it hasn't cost you, are you in favor of a bill that would mandate this for all employers? Wouldn't in some ways it benefit you if this wasn't a mandate, because workers could say, I'm going to go to Randy's company because it gives me better benefits?
Sure. Absolutely, except that my feeling is that this bill is a minimum standard as it's proposed. It would provide a minimum standard of protection for employees if something happens. But in my mind, from the perspective of as a concerned citizen, I think the standard should be beyond that, and then this still leaves it up to the business to exceed the standard if they choose to.
But Randy, thanks for your call. I hear that. I appreciate that, Bill. I'm going to get you in just a moment, but let's get Andrew calling in from Manchester first and get his perspective. Hi, Andrew. You're on.
Hi. I first want to say that I love my employees, and I want to do everything I can to keep them happy and paid, but as a small business owner, my business relies on my employees working to produce, and if they don't show up for work, my business can't produce, and therefore I'm not making money, so I can't afford to pay them when they're not there. While I think that there's a good reason to have something in place, some businesses just can't operate without their employees, so that's why they get paid by the hour. They get paid for the hours that they're there.
Andrew, we got a note from Kathy in East Montpelier who says, yes, it's a challenge to own a small business, but a small business that cannot pay its employees a livable wage or provide a modest level of sick leave might just be too marginal to be worthy of the goodwill of policymakers. How do you respond to that?
I think that's a good statement. It is, not all businesses create huge amounts of profits. We all can't be put on the same page and expect to be paid, you know, paying the same wages to everybody.
Well, I think what Kathy is saying is that if you can't afford to give your workers paid sick leave, maybe you shouldn't be in business. I think that's actually the message from her note. So what do you think about that?
I would say, ouch, I'm a small studio artist, and I don't profit that much, but I put food on the table for my employees and my family, and, you know, we struggle to make ends meet, and we live a good lifestyle, and but to put extra strain on us to support people that aren't working, I think that's, I don't know, I couldn't survive that way.
Andrew, thanks for calling in. I hear your perspective as well. We'll add that to Randy, who we heard from just a moment ago. Bill Driscoll, pick up on this. You've got two perspectives here.
Yeah, I'd like to respond to a couple of points. I think it's understandable when some business owners see what they want to do and what they're able to do, and then think that, well, then that should be able to apply to everybody. And unfortunately, that's not really the case. Every business is different, even within the same kind of – even within the same type of business. You know, manufacturing tends to provide some of the best wages and benefits of any other sector. But we know that just because one group of manufacturers can afford to do something doesn't mean that should then be imposed on all manufacturers, and certainly should not be imposed on all other sectors. That's just simply not workable. And I think with regard to the question of how much compromise there is currently in this bill, you know, certainly we appreciate the fact that a lot of the advocates feel that they've made a lot of movement on the legislation. But, you know, with all due respect, the fact that we still have that block of mandated time of ultimately 5 days, the fact that there's no accommodation for the size of the business, the nature of the business, how long it's actually been in business, you know, certainly it's a challenge for startups. Those are among some of really the core problems with this sort of mandatory approach, which there really hasn't been much change, significant change, since the idea has been kicking around for really the last several years. It's also important, I think, to note that there really are only three other states that have tried to do this statewide, and they're all different in some ways. Some are more extensive than Vermont in terms of California and Massachusetts. But in other ways, they aren't. Connecticut certainly has one of the one of the more flexible approaches in terms of it only applies to companies with 50 or more employees. It only applies to certain sectors. But if you look at California, that's only 3 days period. There's other accommodations for union contracts that are not like we have in Vermont. If you look at Massachusetts, the only other state that has done this statewide, it's not actually mandatory paid leave if you have 10 or fewer employees. It's only for the ones that have more than that. So there are a lot of ways in which this this bill is still very significant in the restrictions and costs it's going to impose on employers, and it goes further in a lot of ways than even the few other states that have gone down this road. And in California and Massachusetts, those laws are really just becoming effective this year. So it's going to be hard to see now how that's really going to play out in the economy as a whole.
Michelle Fay, I want to tease apart that idea that this applies to all businesses. So it's not like a size difference that a business that has 10 or more or 50 or more employees has to do this. But a business like Andrew's, he said he was a studio artist. He's providing wages but really can't afford to provide paid sick leave on top of that. We also got a note from Joe who says, with things like paid sick leave and minimum wage, why should a business with two employees be treated the same as McDonald's or Walmart? So why is this something that you feel should apply to all businesses, no matter the size? And we should say it does exempt seasonal and temporary workers, but all businesses that employ people year-round on a permanent basis.
Well, that's actually one of the pieces of feedback that our business organizers heard from the business community is if you set a carve-out level, you will inevitably have somebody just below it or just above it looking at each other and saying, hey, how do you rate? You know, and so it's really critical for – it was critical for the businesses that we spoke to that there's a level playing field and, you know, that the impact, the fiscal impact is sort of proportional to the size of your business, the larger your payroll, maybe the potential for larger outlays. But and the other thing is we need to craft a policy that reflects Vermont, and Vermont is built on small business, and those are the jobs right now that are less likely to have paid sick days. So our goal is to get paid sick days and safe days for as many Vermonters as we can. That means including everybody in that calculus.
We're talking today, again, about the pros and cons of paid sick leave. There's a bill in the legislature right now that would require Vermont businesses to offer paid sick time to their employees. Some people think the bill doesn't go far enough. We're going to talk a little bit about that. 3 or 5 days, and eventually, is that enough time for people in a year? And we're going to hear more, we hope, from small business owners who have a perspective on this. They're right in the thick of it. Do you offer paid sick time to your employees? Why? And how much does it cost you? Do you get that money back in loyalty and productivity and fewer workers taking out sick because they haven't been made sick by their other employees? Or is it something that costs you and that actually makes you think twice about whether or not you can hire employees at all? Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're taking a look at the concept of paid sick leave. Vermont legislators are looking at the issue, too, and considering passing a bill that would require businesses to offer paid days off to their employees, something that hasn't gained much traction in the Statehouse before. We've been looking at what the main sticking points are for business owners and why workers' rights groups are pushing the bill, but they're not totally happy with the legislation either in all cases, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that. We're going to talk about the number of days that are offered. And we're hearing from some of you as well. If you want to chime in with your perspective, maybe you have been thinking about this as an employee or as a business person. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. And there's a robust discussion going on online. Go to vpr.net, click on the Vermont Edition page, and you can add your thoughts there or respond to others. Let's go to Anne, who's calling in from Shalott. Hi, Anne. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling just to say that in addition to the philosophical argument that Michelle pointed out, there's also an economic argument that businesses, whether small or large, need employees. And in order for employees to make it work to live in Vermont, they need to have benefits that make sense, such as paid sick days. And I think in our effort to attract younger Vermonters, we need to offer this kind of thing that makes living in Vermont work for people with families.
And thanks for your call. Appreciate that. Let's go to Jim in Brookfield. Hi, Jim. Where do you stand?
Hi. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. My 2 cents worth is just a response to Andrew's comments. Andrew is a small business person, claims that he can't afford it. It rolled off his tongue that his business doesn't have the luxury to pay that, but it provides for a good living for himself and his family. If we are talking about 3 days per year, that's one day every 4 months. What does that come to? 1 or 1.5% of the work days at the perth that the employee does put in, and then they can possibly make a claim for a sick day. It comes to 1 to 1.5% of what they put in, and it's the same as a very, very small raise. And if a small business can't afford 1.5% more just to give an employee a paid sick day so they can take care of kids, they can take care of the elderly in their family, et cetera, that business just doesn't really, I agree, that business is too marginal and that business shouldn't be around. I think that a small business owner certainly, when they have to call in sick and the employees run it, that small business owner is still making money because his business still exists. And the whole, even in a small business, all the employees, it's a, you know, around family businesses, I think that small business can afford to take care of the employees just as it can take care of the owners.
All right, Jim, we got your perspective. Thanks for that. I want to give a counterpoint from Silas, who says, remember that the cost of an employee is not just what they're paid. It's anywhere from an average of 70 to 75% more than that, depending. Remember, the employer already has to pay the government a tax based on the employee's wage and pays for workers' compensation insurance as cost to the business that is based on payroll, et cetera. So Silas sees this as one more cost on top of all these other hidden costs. Our guests today are Bill Driscoll, Vice President of Associated Industry of Vermont, and Michelle Fay, director of the Vermont Paid Sick Days campaign. So let's bring them back in here now that we've heard a few more perspectives. Bill Driscoll, what are you thinking, you know, based on what you've heard?
Well, I guess just to respond to some of those last points, you know, I think it's fair to say that most people have no idea whatsoever about how marginal most businesses are in terms of what is their actual margin of making a profit or keeping their operational cost viability going. And to take an approach where, well, we feel that unless you offer these benefits that are much more generous than what you're doing, you don't deserve to be in business. That's a very unfortunate point of view. I don't think that really appreciates how many businesses are really close to the line and what the consequences would really be if the state just cavalierly pushes those businesses over the edge, particularly for the people that those businesses are in fact employing. And to have those people potentially losing their jobs just because their employer can offer a more generous benefit package is not – I don't think it's a very well thought through position. And I think it is important.
On the other hand, though, you're looking – I mean, that's looking at it from a business perspective, which is absolutely valid. Well, but if you look at it from a worker's perspective where that worker, if he or she takes a day off, may not be able to pay the bills, you know, how do you square those two perspectives?
And I think addressing those circumstances, which are certainly a narrow, narrow subset of what we're talking about, there are other ways to approach that. But
how?
Frankly, just to finish my point, though, it is in fact a concern and a viewpoint for the employees as well. If a business fails, it is not just the business owner who's out of work. It's everybody who works for that business owner and then their families who suffer. So it is a very holistic, if you will, concern about keeping these operations viable. With regard to if you have circumstances where unpaid leave is a challenge for folks because they are on the lower end of the wage scale and whatnot, there are other ways for that to be supported potentially through public programs. I think one of the questions that is most relevant here is not whether or not people should have access to whether it's medical care or services for in the cases of abuse and whatnot that are being addressed by this bill. It's where do you cross the line between when it's a reasonable requirement and responsibility for the employer to provide the time and to pay for it, and when do you cross the line because of affordability issues for the employer that have other consequences for everybody? Does it cross the line into a public policy? And then you just find different ways to support the services that you want to provide. And our concern is that to take the approach of this bill, it's taking too much of an inflexible and extensive burden and putting it on to the employers, where really it's perhaps a broader need and a broader requirement for responding to that need than simply saying to employers, you have to take care of it.
Michelle Fay, your response?
You know, I think Bill raises an important issue. There is a broader response in place for employers who are not providing livable wages and adequate benefits, and that's our social safety net. A report recently came out of the University of California at Berkeley that showed that nationally, 56% of public benefits are going to people who are working. And in Vermont, that number is 54%. The price tag for that in Vermont is $372 million going to working Vermonters who can't make ends meet based on the pay that they're receiving. So this is a huge issue for taxpayers, and I think that rather than framing this as a business versus worker issue, it's actually a Vermont-wide issue, and we need to decide as consumers and as employers and as workers, what are our values as Vermonters, and what standards do we want to put in place? What this bill does is put a minimum standard in place. As one of the callers said, 3 days a year, up to 5 days a year. Anyone who has kids knows that, your kids are going to get sick at some point. The average child gets sick 3 days a year and has to miss school. Younger kids miss even and more than that. To ask parents to choose between letting their kids stay home sick, alone, pulling an older child out of school to stay home with them, which we heard about some testimony about that in House General, or missing a day of work. And then, as you said, having to decide whether they forego groceries or the oil bill that week. These are real problems facing Vermont families, and they just don't mesh with what we stand for in Vermont.
Let's go to Chuck, who's calling in from Hinesburg. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm a small construction company owner in Hinesburg. And I am all in favor of this because I would love to offer this to my employees. And the reason that it makes sense to me is that because everybody's going to be required to do it. They're talking about the burden on the employer. I think it's really the burden goes over to the consumer. But as an employer, if I'm the only one doing it, my company's at a disadvantage. But if everybody's doing it, I'm not at a disadvantage. So I'm all in favor of this.
So, thanks. Chuck, you don't offer that benefit right now, but you would be happy to if it was something that everybody
absolutely
had to do?
Absolutely. We offer, vacation days and we paid holidays, and I would love to do this. But if I did it and my other competitors did not do it, I'm at a disadvantage, and I need to get jobs for my employees. But if we're all doing it, all required to do it, then it's a level playing field. I would not be at a disadvantage if that happens.
Chuck, thanks for your call. Appreciate that. Before we move on to some other comments, Michelle, maybe you can clarify, because there is language in this bill for companies that already offer paid time off for their employees, even if it's not specifically noted in the benefits package as paid sick time. If you're offering paid vacation, explain why this doesn't actually change things for those companies.
Right. The bill stipulates that if you are offering any kind of paid time off, whether that's combined time off or vacation or personal days, that as long as your employees can use it for the needs that are stated in the bill, so taking care of themselves or a sick family member, domestic and sexual violence safe days, then you're good. There's no change for you. There's nothing you need to do. There's no reporting. The entire thing is compliance based. So there's no change.
Again, we're talking today about paid time off and should employers be required to give it to their employees, their full-time employees. Hearing a lot of perspectives today, it's great to hear from business owners and from workers where you come down on this issue, what this bill means to you, where you live. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. And let's go to Heidi, who's waiting on the line from Mendon. Hey, Heidi, go ahead.
Hi. Well, one thing that I think having mandatory sick days would help mitigate is the fact that so many kids go to school sick because their parents can't afford to take a day off, and then the kids get other kids sick and get their teachers sick, and the other kids go home to households, some of which are taking care of elders who have cancer. And I used to work at a daycare center, and kids would be sent to daycare with all kinds of contagious diseases because the parents didn't take time off, and then I would get sick, and then I couldn't visit my grandmother who had lymphoma. And I only visited her twice in the course of a year, and one of those times I got her sick and she died because she had low immunity because I kept getting sick at work. I was constantly sick from kids at work. And I know of families where there's an extended family, and one of the people in the extended family is a grandparent with cancer treatment going on. And the kids are constantly coming home sick, and then they have to send the grandparent somewhere else. or either the parent or the grandparent gets sick, because the kids are constantly getting sick from each other, because kids, many of them, don't have parents who can take sick time without having trouble paying the rent. And so I think this is a much-needed bill, and I think maybe there should be some kind of an application that small businesses can make if they can't afford to pay for sick days. They could give their whole financial story and in great detail to the state, and they could get an exemption for 1 year in exchange for required financial counseling so that they can get their business more viable for the next year.
Heidi, thanks for the call. I appreciate your perspective, and I'm very sorry to hear about your personal situation. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. Perhaps not as much life or death as what Heidi was saying, but we got a note from Blythe who says, you know, in the service industry, I think it would be wise to have paid days off. I don't want sick people sneezing and coughing on my food. But they do. They can't afford to call in sick. $64 doesn't sound like a lot of money, but it's two tanks of gas, a week of groceries, an electric bill, or half of your rent in Burlington. My mother is an RN. She doesn't get paid days off either. It would be unethical for her to go to work sick, but she still has bills to pay. We're hearing from many of you. Your perspective, go to vpr.net. Click on Vermont Edition to share your thoughts. We're hearing from Kate in Reigate, who says, the Associated Industries of Vermont website states that manufacturing provides the best benefits for working Vermonters and that the organization is working to raise the standard of living for working Vermonters. I'd like to hear Mr. Driscoll explain how having no sick leave is a benefit to workers and raises their standard of living.
Sure. And as I talked about earlier, we're actually very proud of the wages and benefits that manufacturing can provide. But even for our sector, you know, most manufacturers are actually extremely small. And if you have the very small operations, and also very importantly for this economy where we're trying to recover and grow, when you have startups and new companies, they're not going to be in a position to offer the same level of benefits that, say, more mature or larger manufacturers can. And you find that same phenomenon in other sectors as well, which is why there's so much widespread concern across different kinds of businesses about this policy. So, yes, it's great to be able to provide what we can when we can. But there are going to be circumstances where it's just simply not affordable and not workable. And then the challenge then is how do you find a more flexible or reasonable way to address concerns in those areas rather than having this sort of one size fits all. And it's important to keep into context, it's not just the cost of this particular benefit, and it's not just comparing us against what other states do on this one issue. Unfortunately, Vermont has a lot of challenges. If you look at simply the cost of employing Vermonters, if you combine the unemployment insurance premiums and the workers' comp premiums, we're the most expensive state in the region, the fifth most expensive state in the country. If you look at the minimum wage, we're tied with Connecticut for the highest one in this region, fourth highest nationally. The small the business tax burden, if you combine state and local taxes in Vermont, is the highest in the region and the third highest in the country. These things all add up, and it creates challenges. Simply mandating this benefit doesn't make it appear without any particular consequences. It's going to be a cost. It's going to be an operational challenge, and that comes out of other wages. It comes out of other benefits, and it can come out of more employment. Well, so there are costs that come with this benefit that we need to keep in context.
And on that note, we got an email from Silas who offers a suggestion and says, well, what if the state offered a tax write-off of 100% of the paid sick leave, and the tax to pay for this is then spread over all the taxpayers in the state? We would all equally pay for this. Then that would mean everyone is chipping in their fair share and paying for it, not just the struggling businesses. And Silas is added to some other people who have written in or called in to say, if this is something that we believe is a societal benefit or right, then why don't we all pay for it as a state? Michelle?
You know, I think that that's not a very realistic approach given the current status of the budget and how hard it is to get anything passed that's going to have an economic impact on the state budget. You know, the reality is, as I said before, we taxpayers are all providing this benefit or the consequences of the lack of paid sick days through the social safety net. But that's not adequate. I mean, as Bill said, there has been it's been a tough time. It's been a slow recovery. The same has been true for workers. I know the legislature is increasingly expecting people to work more and in exchange for public benefits. And if we're going to do that, we need to make sure that the work that's available is sufficient for them to meet their needs. And if you look at the Department of Labor tells us where the jobs are growing, it's in these low-wage position. So we need to stand together to make it work.
That's Michelle Fay. She's the director of the Vermont Paid Sick Days Campaign. Thanks for talking with us today. And we've been talking with Bill Driscoll, Vice President of Associated Industries of Vermont. Thanks to you as well. Oh,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming up, warm weather might spell some relief for Vermonters who are homeless, but just because they're not freezing to death doesn't mean they're safe. We'll talk with the director of one shelter who will share some of the challenges the people she works with face. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The temperatures are consistently above 32 degrees now, and our long winter is finally over. For people who are dealing with homelessness, that means the danger of freezing to death and the need for winter warming shelters have passed. But that doesn't mean their lives necessarily get easier. We were thinking about what seasonal changes might mean for our neighbors who are homeless, so we called up Elizabeth Reedy. She's the director of the John Graham Shelter in Vergennes. The shelter provides emergency housing and also works on transitional and permanent housing solutions.
This time of year, the warming shelters close, and so that means that some people are immediately looking to get into a permanent shelter and hopefully from there get into an apartment of their own or a room. So we do see a little bit of increase at this time as people that were formerly just spending the night in the warming shelters are looking for a place to go. And then there are some people that will camp, and they somewhat seem to look forward to it. But I think more and more camping is not such a great idea. I think that DCF doesn't look upon it very well when families with children are homeless and outside. So I think you see a lot of families really trying to get in somewhere. And the other thing is that many of the people that are in the warming shelters have health issues that really should preclude them from being outside. For example, Jane, right now at our shelter, we have people with emphysema, we have people with MS, we have people with cancer. Our youngest person is a newborn, and our oldest is 74. You see people with mental illness, people that need medication management. So more and more people that are seeking shelter are not necessarily just healthy people that can just go out and thrive outside. So I think the end goal always has to be permanent, safe, stable housing.
You mentioned a really wide and broad demographic of people that you interact with. You said at the John Graham Shelter, you know, your youngest resident is a newborn all the way up to 74. And you mentioned families and camping and whether or not they fall afoul then of the Department for Children and Families. Do you find that a lot of families, full families, are facing homelessness?
Oh, absolutely. Vermont is one of the states that has seen an increase in homeless families, and it's a pretty simple formula. The cost of housing exceeds people's ability to pay, and even when people are working, the incomes are, a lot of people are working now at the shelter, mostly everybody, but they may be working at fast food place, they might be working in a supermarket, on a farm, in a nursing home. I'm just kind of rattling off the top of my head the people that are there now. And they're just not making enough to pay the rents. In Addison County and Chittenden County, the rents are really, really up there. And it's tough for people to compete with students or with people that have good educations. We have some really great employers in Addison County, and they attract some well-educated people who are able to pay good rents. So other people really struggle in that housing market. What we try to do is work with people to bridge the gap, whether it means employment or getting a housing choice voucher or Vermont rental subsidy, whatever it's going to take to help bridge the gap from people's current incomes to being able to afford the cost of rent.
Can you talk a little bit about what I think of is the invisibility of the rural homeless? If you live in a city and there are people who are living rough in a city, you often see them. You walk by them at the very least. People who are living with homelessness and dealing with homelessness in a very rural environment, that's harder to spot.
Yeah, it's harder to spot, but the suffering is really no less. We have five houses. The John Graham Shelter owns five houses, and two of them, one is just a shelter, and the other we use in congregate settings. And there we have large families, small families, some are sharing a unit. And then in our other units, we have primarily families. And some folks we try to put in until they can get it together to get the income together for a place of their own. So it's kind of a transitional stopgap measure. Others are there longer, and sometimes it takes us longer than we wish it did to help people find something that will be sustainable for them with their income. So,
can I ask you about another subset of the homeless population, and that's young people, and especially young people who are dealing with issues of gender and sexuality? We know statistically nationally, and what we've heard in Vermont that is true as well, is that young people who are dealing with issues of sexuality or gender issues are far more likely to be homeless than other young people. And you have said that these people are especially vulnerable to harm.
Yeah, I think they are. They may be healthy and young, but people are very vulnerable. People are vulnerable to other people. They're vulnerable to abuse. They're vulnerable to being taken advantage of. So we really don't like to see youth camping, especially in the LGBT population, because we just don't want to see any harm come to them. You know, I think the thing is to create really safe spaces where people feel supported, people feel that they have a sense of community, a sense of belonging. So it's really more than just a room or just a shelter. It's a sense that I belong somewhere and, you know, people care about me.
And how do you make sure that they are safer at the John Graham Shelter, for example? Because just being in a shelter doesn't necessarily ensure the safety of a vulnerable person.
Well, we have really excellent staff. We're staffed 24/7, and we screen people to make sure that there are not people that have histories of being predators on others or being violent. We have a full-time clinician available to help people if they're having a tough time. Mental health counselor with also a background in substance abuse. So if people are struggling with an issue or if something kind of heads south during the day, there's somebody there to talk to almost all the time. And we also just have a really safe environment at night. There's deadlines that people have to be in, and there's staff there all around the clock. And there's always somebody there that can sit down and help you try to problem solve, whether it's a housing issue or how to get a ride to work or just try to work things out, you know.
Are there other things happening in Vermont, either in funding or in trends that you're seeing with the people that you work with, that we should be aware of that, you know, I might not know to ask you about?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that's been a tremendous help, and that is this Vermont rental subsidy that has begun. And it's been a lifesaver for a lot of people, because what happens with families with children, if we get a shelter full of people and we can't move them, especially in the winter, it becomes kind of a, I don't know, almost like a destitute situation. You know, people don't have much hope. They don't know how they're ever going to get out, how they're ever going to get an apartment. And so the first thing we do is we work with this Vermont rental subsidy. And anybody can apply, although it is scored. So if you're working and you have children, then you get a pretty high score. If you're working and you're single, you would still be able to apply. And so when the subsidy comes through, it really helps bridge the gap between the incomes that people have from their own job and the cost of the rent. With that, we've been able to really help people get into units of their own. And then we follow them with case management resources, making sure they're paying the rent, helping them to be good tenants. And then at the end of the year, they are hopefully going to move on and be independent, or if they have a physical or a mental health disability, then perhaps they would be able to get a permanent voucher. That has been really a godsend, and we've gotten dozens of people into housing this year with those Vermont rental subsidies. It's been helpful. And, you know, in Vermont, people do have the sense that everybody needs to be inside. You know, we've had our sleep out. Spectrum's had their sleep out. more and more people are kind of getting the idea that this is the kind of suffering that we don't want our neighbors to go through.
That's Elizabeth Reedy. She's the director of the John Graham Shelter in Vergennes, and she's been illuminating some of the issues that people who are homeless in Vermont are facing. Thank you very much for talking with me.
Thank you, Jane. It's great to talk with you.
The state healthcare exchange has been expensive, frustrating for users, and a target of criticism ever since it went online a year and a half ago. Now, state auditor Doug Hoffer has written a comprehensive report on what went wrong with Vermont Health Connect. He'll be my guest tomorrow on Vermont Edition, and you can send your comments and questions to vermontedition@vpr.net. Then join us live at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Singeri, and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Devin Karambulis and Amanda Shepherd. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. And our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.